part of it's this challenge of make sure you're not a lone ranger, make sure you have good team around you to do these things.
Cross-generational.
The guys with the job who aren't going anywhere, who know how to, you know, they're not just walking around with a toque and a backpack on waiting for their time on stage. Wait, or they're going to be gone.
You have to translate toque, bro, because we're in a different culture.
Oh, sorry. Hat.
It's a beanie,
hat.
Dude. It's a beanie.
I don't know about a beanie.
It's called a beanie.
Is it a beanie?
I got so many Canadian friends. Dude, that toque is so on point. I'm like, bro, are you talking about my underwear?
Hat.
I'm talking about my baggy pants. I'm not really sure what you're talking about.
All right.
Gonna identify as one thing being your thing, one thing that you have insight to, and you don't have to have like a false pretense humility. What do you have your eyes on that that you feel really confident knowing, man, this, we should be talking about this, or this is something that people need to be paying attention to, especially in the next several months or the next several seasons of Capital C Church,
right?
When you're looking at it from your perspective.
Well, in our context, it might be a little bit different, you know, depending on where you're at. I'm in Canada, Vancouver's outside of Vancouver. And so very post-Christian culture, used to be Christian back in like the 50s. It was very Christian, very Christian nation. But now very post-Christian. And so when I felt called to plant the church, it was kind of around this framework of how do you reach post-Christian people? And one of the things about that that I begin to think through, which C.S. Lewis gives this metaphor of when you're talking to a virgin about marriage, they have like this viewpoint that's very like positive. Oh, marriage is going to be great. But if you're talking to a divorced person about marriage, they tend to be a little bit more reluctant. They're like, I know all the negative things. I don't like it. So he said, when you're preaching the gospel to some village in Africa that's never heard of the gospel, it's like a virgin view of the gospel. Like,
it's water in a desert.
Yeah, totally.
It's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, but to a culture like Canada, it's post-Christian. And so it's, we've already been through this. We don't like it. We know what we don't like. We know what we're against.
Yeah.
So how do you posture the gospel to a culture like that?
Yeah, how does like that act? Repackage it in a way.
Yeah.
It makes it palatable.
Totally. And blow away all the kind of the mythology, the things that people think Christianity is about, and go, okay, we're not talking about that stuff. We're talking about Jesus, talking about the gospel. We're talking about the form of community and how it connects to your life.
Yeah.
And so really that's what our church was born out of.
That's great.
7 years ago. And so I think if there's anything we've probably hopefully done well by God's grace, it's how to reach a culture that's already abandoned all that. And kind of show them Jesus, the gospel, the Bible in a way that goes, man, this wasn't what you thought it was. Don't reject something based on what you thought it was, because it's not actually those things. Reject that. Be offended by this. Reject this if that's, but just make sure it's actually the gospel that
and
you're throwing.
As a church and as a pastor, you're able to say, hey, there are some things that you're allowed to cut off and cut out. We're okay with that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people think you have to take the whole package.
Right.
If you're going to bring Jesus on, you got to bring all the frustrating bolt-on, add-on things that we hate or
and
we don't
usually
like
that's
with.
The people. And so what we try to do is go, yeah, the church is a disaster. The church is a mess. But let's get back to what it actually is. Don't reject Jesus because you don't like Christians.
Yeah, that's good.
You got to go, who is actually Jesus? There's people who misrepresent Jesus all over the place.
Yeah.
Don't reject it because, you know, because of those people.
Like your neighbor is got a fish on the back of his car and he's like the biggest jerk in the world or whatever.
Don't reject Jesus because of that. Let's try to blow all that away and go, what are we dealing with here? And let that, and one of the things that people think is, well, that means, you know, in Canada that we can't be offensive or we can't really share what the Bible says or we can't put a high bar on discipleship because everyone's going to be like, I need a low bar.
I'm offended. This is too much.
Yeah. And we've seen the opposite. The higher I go, the more cost of discipleship stuff we do, the more we go, Jesus means your life isn't about getting a new kitchen, getting a new garage, getting it. Because I live in, you know, Vancouver is very affluent, very like safe, secure. Yeah. And the more we just preach Jesus, this kind of discipleship life, the more people go, oh man, my whole life got rocked. I was stressed for 45 minutes in the church, but I got to bring my friends. And the more that I go, some of you are just consumers of religious goods and services and need to leave our church to free up seats for people who actually need Jesus, they invite four friends back.
Wow.
And so we've seen the opposite almost be true. The higher bar we put, the more Canadians are actually interested to go, this is a real thing.
That this guy is calling me to the carpet in a way that I've never been called out. Now, that was probably the... that. If you would have told me that approach 10 years ago, people would have called you insane. Like, you cannot just get up in people's faces. The probably the opposite of what they would call like a seeker-based environment, right?
Right, right.
My guess is that we're going to see more and more post-Christian... if not entire communities, for sure segments within churches amongst rising generation millennials, Gen Xers, right? Everyone's reevaluating everything.
Yep.
High skepticism, you know, high BS meter. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but
around me you're allowed to say it.
Well, I got Rick Warren behind
me. Yeah, exactly. Like I only got a picture with that.
But later. What would you tell churches who are seeing a gradient shift? Like there's a shifting tide where they weren't necessarily having to deal with it face on, but they're seeing it creep to the surface, this post-Christian value system.
Yeah.
How do they address that? From a let's say the church is 20 years old or 25 years old,
right.
And they've got heavy values the way things are done. How do they address that post-Christian ethic and value system?
Well, I personally think it all starts from the leader in the pulpit, and so you have to represent it. You know, they talk about like a mist in the pulpit is a fog in the pew. It's like this.
Whoa, that was real poetic.
Dude. Right? Well, I don't even know where I picked that up. But the idea that it's going to flow, it's going to filter down to the people, whatever's coming out, whatever the, so I'm really kind of a believer that the preaching, teaching ministry of the church is what's going to form the worldview of the people sitting there. So what we try to do is constantly, so I come from an atheistic background, grew up in a non-Christian home. First time I ever came to church, I was 19. So I preach the Bible out of a skeptical mindset week.
Yeah, that's it. That's almost in your DNA. I want to make sure that I'm understanding this in order that my people would understand it.
Totally. And so almost every week I'm a verse by verse just go through the Bible preacher. So I've been 2.5 years in the book of Matthew and we're on chapter 17.
Come on.
And so it's just literally, but every passage, I try to go, what would an agnostic, what would a Buddhist, what would an atheist say to this text? What would my dad, who was such a staunch atheist, he wouldn't let my mom spell my brother's name with 2 T's because it would be biblical, and then name me Mark 4 years later. So just didn't have a clue, didn't see the irony in this.
Didn't see it.
And so what would he think of this passage that's Jesus up on a mountain and there's, you know, transfiguration. Mm-hmm. Like what he would go, nah, and there's... So every time I address, now you're sitting here and you don't believe any of this. Mm-hmm. A friend brought you, you build a culture like that from the pulpit every week. And sooner or later, even if you know that everyone sitting there is a Christian, let's say you have 100 people, you know them all by name and they're all Christians.
Yeah.
You start talking like that and 3 or 4 months later, you'll have a different culture because they'll start actually bring those people because he's actually addressing my friends.
They feel safe enough to bring other people into that environment.
And you have to create that culture from the start, from the beginning, from the pulpit. So I think it starts there and it filters down.
That's a high responsibility then from the senior pastor or senior teacher is the speed of the leader is the speed of the organization, the speed of the church. So if I'm a young, let's say I'm within the ranks of a church whose leader is not on that level communication-wise, or let's say, you know, it's funny, they were talking about, you know, hey, Baptists, you're not allowed to like argue this week. I remember hearing that yesterday on the platform.
Right.
What do I do as a guy who recognizes those pain points? I don't have access to the pulpit because, you know, this our conversation is heavily... consumed by the number 2 guy, 3 guy, 4 guy within an organization.
Yeah.
As a senior leader, what can you tell guys who are within it, maybe circuiting their way towards influence, but they're dealing with the pain of a senior pastor who can't identify or connect that way? What do we do below the surface that can help?
I think then you can ask the same kind of question organizationally. So when you're sitting in meetings and the women's, you know, conference wants to do this, or they want to do the website, or the kids, the youth, you constantly bring that question to the table. What we're doing on social media, on our website, at our retreats, how would they connect to unchurched, dechurched people? And so you keep asking that question over and over and not assume at any point that anyone's asking that question, but keep bringing that question to the table. Because too often you get 300 or 400 people in your church and now all of a sudden you're ministering to Christians. Mm. You're preaching sermons to the healthy. You know, Jesus is like, I came for the unhealthy, right? Yeah. The sick. But it's easy to preach sermons to the healthy, man.
Totally.
They'll take boring you know, run of the mill, not like, oh, I got my little Christian sermon today, you know, whatever, and I go for lunch. It's like, you can't preach to that person.
Yeah, yeah.
And so everything we do as a church, I know when we started, it goes after a certain demographic. And it says our website, our worship songs, our aesthetic, mm-hmm. it's all going to be built around reaching this. And that means we don't do this and we don't do this and we don't do this, but we talk like this and we don't use that word.
It's an if, you know? This, then not that.
Right.
Yeah, yes. That's
and
really
And so you got to think through language from the front. If you use Christian lingo, if mm-hmm. you, if everything's too safe and too boring and too beige and too, you know, whatever, then it's not going to work. You have to,
too,
you know,
beige.
It's a beige. It's just, it's too,
it's bland.
It's
it has
bland.
No flavor. And no, sometimes people, not everyone's going to love
enough.
Flavor. Not everyone's going to love the seasoning you put out there.
But you got to go, you know, Jesus looks and goes, I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves, and wolves destroy sheep. And so you got to go, if your church is too safe, if your ministry is too mm-hmm. safe, if you don't lead from a limp, if you're not raw, if you don't go, hey, I'm broken. If you're the hero of every sermon or every ministry leadership, then you're doing it wrong. You have to go, I'm a disaster. So I grew up with Tourette's and OCD, and so I lead from that. So I planted a church with 50 people in a perfect neighborhood. Like everyone's perfect. They have perfect cars, perfect houses, perfect marriages. And I got up and said, it won't work. And the guy who was mentoring me at the time, he said, it will work, because when you stand up there with all your twitching around and all mm-hmm. your little Tourette's noises or whatever, you're going to give them permission to be
to
broken. And that's exactly what happened. So these 50 people started to grow and grow and grow. We couldn't contain them anymore and had to change places. And now 7 years later, we got, you know, 3 campuses and 8 services. We do them all. I only preach now. I used to preach 4 or 5 a Sunday. Mm-hmm. I preach once and everything else is video. And everyone said, that's not going to work. You can't do video.
Yeah.
You can't preach the Bible for 55 minutes, verse by verse. You can't be 29 in a hoodie and yell at people in Canada and tell them to repent of sin.
Yeah, Canada is not exactly the place.
Believe in hell. You
for
can't
that.
Believe. Yeah, no, you're not allowed to do any of that. And I said, well, here's what I'm going to do all of that and see how it works. And it's crazy. We just baptized our 1,000th person.
Wow.
Last month, which in Canada, I mean, it's the Spirit of God. I mean, that's all. It's just the Spirit decided to blow and do a thing, and we are hanging on.
So, yeah, and to be reactionary and insightful on that, caught that wave. Rick always talks about in purpose-driven ministries,
catching the wave.
Catch
the wave.
You
can't create it. You can't
create it.
No,
right?
You just catch it and ride it. So yeah. So
that's epic. Yeah. On your exit, Mark, what's one thing you would tell a pastor who is on the verge of breaking out? He's on the verge of starting or planting, or he's got a ministry that's gonna, in his mind, strike gold. What do you tell him to make it through to, you know, the starting line, I guess?
The finish line or the starting line?
No, wait, I would say the finish line. Like,
right.
You're lacing up, but then you're thinking, man, once I get on the blocks, everyone's going to see me and it's going to, you know, God knows I can't run a fast lap or, you know, everyone talks about the finish line. I want to help people get to the starting line.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I would say you got to get people around you, that are going to mentor you and pour into you well. And, I meet a lot of planters that have this lone ranger philosophy. And for me, they come and meet with me. They're like, okay, what was your success? I want to do what you did. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, I'm ready to plant a church. Okay. How many sermons have you preached? 5. Okay. Well, I preached every year or every week for 5 years. For an hour to university students before I ever thought about planting a church. So you and your 5 sermons, you're probably not going to work. You need a team around. I had an amazing team, like team A, right? 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds. I'm talking to planters, all they have. When they come to me and they say, we want to plant a village church. So we're talking to a guy right now in a city in Canada. He's like, we want to plant a village in this city. I say, okay, give me your core launch team, but I don't only want names, I want ages. And so in the brackets, he writes ages, 21, 17, 20, 23. I said, I can't plant the church with those people because they're going to be gone in 6 months and they don't have any money. So give me 45, give me 50, give me 60-year-old people. Show me you can lead them. Then I'll let you become a church. And so they're out trying to find these guys, but they can't. Because all they have is these 20-year-olds
totally.
Who want to do this thing, but they don't keep the lights on.
Yeah.
And so part of it's this challenge of make sure you're not a lone ranger, make sure you have a good team around you to do these things.
Cross-generational.
Cross-generational. The guys with a job who aren't going anywhere, who know how to, you know, they're not just walking around with a toque and a backpack on waiting for their time on stage. Wait, or they're going to be gone.
You have to translate toque, bro, because we're in a different culture.
Oh, sorry. I don't know, hat.
It's a beanie,
hat.
Dude. It's a beanie.
I don't know about a beanie.
It's called a beanie.
Is it a beanie?
I got so many Canadian friends. Dude, yeah, toque is so on point. I'm like, bro, you're talking about my underwear? Or I'm talking about my baggy pants? I'm not really sure what you're talking about.
All right, in Canada, that works. All right. Anyway, so and then, too, you were talking about earlier, your audience kind of looking for the what's the innovative.
Yeah.
Looking at what's next. For us, we're starting a thing in 2 months from now where we're calling it Cinema Church. We don't have any real better name for it. And one of the thoughts I had, I was sitting in a movie theater watching a terrible movie with my kids, and I was just kind of zoning out and looking around the movie theater.
Probably like
big,
Fireproof or
I won't
some
name
other,
it. Yeah, it was Christian, some great Christian. No, it was not. We don't get those. We don't get those in Canada. those go right to VHS.
If like so, Saddleback was a major investor in Fireproof, we just cut that edit out.
Yeah, that's fine. So I was sitting in a movie theater watching a terrible movie, and I started to daydream.
Okay.
And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, we got 300, 400 seats here, a beautiful screen. My people watch my sermon on screen. People have done the video, the movie theater mm-hmm. church thing where mm-hmm. they show the sermon, but then they do live worship.
Yeah.
And the problem is I listen to that and it usually sounds terrible because movie theaters aren't built. They're dry. They're soundproof.
Yeah.
You throw a couple of Mackies on sticks and a band up front, you're not going to be able to capture the real beauty
it
of
wasn't
a worship
service. It was built to play...
Right. Right.
Produced content.
Yes. Mixed, proper,
yes.
immersive.
Yes.
So then I said, okay, so what if I didn't just record? So what we do is we do a sermon where the camera never moves, right? Just sits there. Mm-hmm. And so I walk in on mm-hmm. stage and it's mm-hmm. not all these cuts because to try to never break the fourth wall, like give this sense of the guy's in the stage and I forgot 5 minutes in that he's not.
That's good.
So that's what we do.
Full frame, full body.
And I've seen guys do that teaching, but then the band gets up with all the wires all over and they mm-hmm. throw a couple Mackies on and it sounds bad. And so I said, well, what if we put the worship in here too? So what if we recorded all the worship at
single frame,
never moves. It fills the entire screen of the movie theater. The worship goes, the worship team walks off. Then you watch me walk out on stage and I preach and it's 1 week delay so that we mix the sound through the speakers.
Precisely.
Everything's done.
Yeah, yeah.
So we start that at the in 2 months from now.
I'm
now,
super excited.
I
to see
don't
that.
Know if it's going to work.
Yeah, who cares?
I meet with leaders and they go, this is the dumbest idea I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And they say, why wouldn't people just watch it online? I said, listen, we post the sermons every week on Tuesday morning now.
Yeah.
They could just watch them online now, but for some reason they show up.
Uh-huh.
And I think this experience is going to help us. The reason we're doing it, because in Canada, we can plant churches more efficiently, faster, cheaper, with less leaders this way, coast to coast. That's our vision.
Mm.
We want to go from, we want to plant churches in Ottawa, Toronto, Calgary, Halifax. Like we want to go across the country over the next 10 years. And this would be a way to do that efficiently for cheaper and with less leaders.
That's
so,
awesome.
So we're going to try it. You know, by next year this time, I could be talking about an utter failure. But
hey, but that would be
trying.
Another lesson to bring to the
it's
table.
It's like, hey, here's a
Mark,
crappy idea.
I love the innovation. I love that you're not afraid to try. And I certainly believe that that's a mark of our generation for sure. That
yeah,
we're not.
That's what I'm seeing too.
Yeah, we're not afraid to lose on a bet. And
yeah, totally.
I think that
not
that's
that
going to.
I've ever bet.
Well,
anything,
I mean, yeah,
you know
never. I don't know what that is. But I do know that the more we try and the more we're willing to get out there and put something on the table and see what if.
Yes.
We're
yes.
going to see
what
way
if?
More things hit.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
I'm
right.
excited about it. So
well, I love that. Thanks
yeah.
for your time.
Yeah,
I really
thank
appreciate
you.
It. Thanks
appreciate
for having
it.
Us here at Thrive, which is where we're at. First Southern California romping success so far. How do people stay connected to you if they want to follow your utter successes?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Online, this is villagechurch.com and podcast, that kind of stuff for Village Church. Not the Village Church, just Village Church in Vancouver.
Okay,
yeah.
great. And then are you on Instagram or anything like that?
Yeah, Mark A. Clark.
Mark A. Clark.
MarkACLARK. I think that's my Twitter thing. And then Instagram is Mark. And then that underline thing?
Whatever.
What underscore? Is that? Underscore. So Mark you. Underscore Clark.
The youngest person C-L-A-R-K. In the tour bus is telling us. Thank you, Edwin, of all 26 years old.
That's right.
Underscore Clark.
Yeah.
Mark, I love you. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you guys soon.